the best type of offering. Hi, this is Darko Stefanovic from Walla Walla University School of Theology. Welcome to Good Word, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. We are continuing a series of topics based on the biblical book of Numbers. And to help me explore this challenging book, I have invited two of my colleagues to join me in the discussion, Dr. Kyle Craig, professor of chemistry at Walla Walla University, and Dr. Paul Dibdahl, my colleague in the School of Theology. He's actually a professor of religion here. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And today we'll be focusing on chapters 18 and 19 of the book of Numbers. I would like to request one of you to read verses 25 through 29 from this chapter, Numbers 18, 25 through 29, please.
The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the Levites and say to them, when you receive from the Israelites the tithe I give you as your inheritance, you must present a tenth of that tithe as the Lord's offering. Your offering will be reckoned to you as grain from the threshing floor or juice from the winepress. In this way, you also will present an offering to the Lord from all the tithes you receive from the Israelites. From these tithes, you must give the Lord's portion to Aaron the priest. You must present the Lord's portion, the best and holiest part of everything given to you."
So we are continuing here the topic of presenting offerings to the Lord, and tithing is also mentioned here. An interesting detail that even the Levites who received the tithes from the people, they also were subject to the same principle, and therefore they had to recognize that these came from the Lord. Now, are there other references in the Pentateuch, references to the custom of tithing? Can you think of some?
Abraham did.
That's one of the earliest in Genesis 14.
And with Melchizedek.
That's right. Any other?
Genesis 28, Jacob talks about giving a tenth of what he receives, that he'll return that to the Lord. Leviticus 27, I think. So there are other places in the Pentateuch that talk about this principle of tithing.
So this is not an isolated case, and it was a well-established practice in Israel. In addition to the offerings that Israelites presented, they also tithed, which means they set apart one-tenth, and they presented that to the Lord. What do you think the words, "the tithe I give you as your inheritance," these words are addressed to the Levites who served in the sanctuary? What do they actually mean?
Well, the Levites were not allotted any land. And the land would be what would produce, the land would be what you would pass on generation to generation. And that's the means by which you would support yourselves. And since the Levites would not have that allotment of land, the tithe is what would be used to support them generation after generation.
Yes. And in fact, one biblical passage nicely puts it, the Lord himself is their inheritance or their heritage.
Didn't they eventually end up with cities, though?
Levitical cities that were designated in which they lived?
Yes.
That is correct.
So they did eventually get some sort of land, so to speak, then?
Or the cities in which they lived.
Yeah.
Rather than the land.
Outside.
It was just the cities.
I'm talking, referring to, like, they had a home in the city.
Yes,
and so that would have been some land, but it wouldn't have actually been land that they could actually farm or anything to.
Like Jericho was, you know, one such city. And it's mentioned, you know, in the parable of the Good Samaritan and so on. One more question tied to this passage, and that is, why is the Lord's portion described as the best and holiest in verse 29?
Well, I wonder about the word holiest. I guess I'm not sure. The holiest portion. A best, I understand. We'd give the best to the Lord, but the holiest portion is to be given. I'm not sure I understand what that that means.
I guess I would say, wouldn't the best also be the holiest by default?
Yeah. Well, there were various objects that were dedicated and actually devoted, we could say, to the Lord.
But when we study the concept of the sanctuary in the Bible, beginning with the tent of meeting, there were various degrees of holiness. So most likely here the superlative is used to show that it was regarded by God in a special way. Well, these are important subjects, maybe not the most fascinating to many of our listeners. And those who have more of poetic type of soul will now rejoice in knowing that there is another passage that we would like to look at, and that is Numbers 21, a different genre. And this time it's a song. I'm sure that some people will be surprised to find out that in the books of the Torah, in the Pentateuch, there are songs. Not everything reads like census lists or lists of rules and laws. But there is some juice, some people would say. Some would even use the term meat. So there are things that kind of come as fresh air here. And here is one in verse 17. Then Israel sang this song, "Spring up, O well, sing about it." It's like someone who has not had a chance to take shower for 3 to 4 weeks and finally can sing in shower. In the case of the Israelites, it was a well. You know, having roamed for days without adequate supply of water and seeing suddenly this fountain in front of them prompted those who were poetically inclined to compose a song. "Spring up, O well, sing about it, about the well that the princes dug, that the nobles of the people sang, the nobles with scepters and staffs." So here is one question. The author of Numbers presents a mixture of legal material and stories. Is there any particular reason why he did that? Stories and poetry, we can say. So here we have a mixture of literary types or genre.
Well, I'm sure that we can all agree that just reading legal material would be rather dull. So from that point of view, if this is going to be a record, you'd want to put something in there to sort of keep people's attention with these long lists that, you know, that we've been seeing here in the book.
That was the first thing that came to my mind as well. Just for interest's sake, it's nice to have some variety. I also think of what I've heard you say many times about the book of Daniel, Zdravko, and that is that the narrative portions are the different genres within that book, that there are connections between those that we sometimes miss. And I suspect that that'd be the case in Numbers as well, that it's not just, you know, a sort of disconnected chapters or disconnected genres, but that they illuminate one another. They help us understand. The poetry might help us bring out something from the legal material and vice versa. There's probably that interchange.
One thing that I like about the Bible is, you know, the Bible is so much related to everyday life, because in life there are times when we talk about rules and regulations, discuss various issues. There are times when there are events happening in our lives and stories are being made, but there is a time for singing, and that's what we are running into right now. Even in the book of Numbers, that may seem to some of our listeners to be as dry as a document could be. But here we have some, and certainly there's more poetry in Numbers. If we continue reading, there is a song about the conflict near the city of Hesbon and so on. Mm-hmm. Paul, did you want to mention something?
Well, I'm reading a book right now at home. It's a theological book, and I just think, you know, what a shock it would be for me to turn a page and, you know, I don't know what equivalent to have a poem there or a song that somehow I could listen to. I mean, it would really be a change, but it would be a welcome change, probably beneficial.
I purchased a book in my travels this summer in Capitol Reef National Park, and it's a beautiful park. It's got lots of interesting geology and interesting all kinds of animals and plants and things, and people have lived there for a long period of time. And so I this book is a book of pictures and short essays. I bought it for the pictures mainly, but then I read the essays, and at the beginning of each of the essays, the author put a little piece of poetry or a quote from something that she found very meaningful to her. And so I bought it for the pictures, but then I read the essays and read the poem, and it, the little poems, and it adds more to, you know, the remembrance I have of that place.
And that ties in with our next question. Some people love to read the poetic passages from the Bible, but there may be others who do not appreciate poetry. And what are some of the things that they miss in their reading?
Well, emotion, I think. I don't know if miss it, but poetry is, well, it's like music. It speaks to us in a different way. It's not merely emotional or purely emotional, but it's different. And I guess I don't have to explain it. We all know that it somehow is different. And I think, Kyle, you mentioned memorable, too, in something that you just said. I think that's another great benefit of poetry. It does tend to lodge in our minds kind of like a picture, whereas lists of things we might tend to forget. We remember the poems. We remember the songs. And there's great value in that. For an oral society, as Israel would have been, you know, that would have been especially valuable.
And it is often amazing how much can be condensed into a few words, into just one line, how much of you know, the facts in everyday life or the lessons that we learn from various experiences in life, when they are condensed in a few lines, how much can be expressed in poetry.
Yeah.
Do you also think that poetry helps people connect in an easier way and feel a sense of a unity, because poetry transcends very often time limitations and other limitations? Do you feel that way?
I think it helps me understand the context of the person who either wrote it or who chose to put it, like in the book I was mentioning. You know, it provides more context than you'd get.
I'll never forget, we were in the Philippines, and there was an African-American singer who did, if I'm not mistaken, Amazing Grace, in a wonderful way that we were also much blessed. And then the speaker of the hour got up, and he said, well, I'm ready to go home. I've been blessed enough. I don't need any other words to say or to listen to. You know, this has been enough, you know, of the blessing for today. And you know, there is much truth in that. That very often in poetry we can express it in an easier way. I would like to. Yes, please.
Yeah, I just think we shouldn't avoid the poetry. You talk about people that don't like it so much. Well, they need to read it anyway. It'd be good for them.
<Go ahead. laughs>
Well, your daily dose of poetry.
Yeah. To be a balanced person, I think we need to listen to that.
So shall we conclude that God accepts material gifts, but also the praises that comes from the heart of the worshiper? I would like to thank both of you, Dr. Paul Dibdahl and Dr. Kyle Craig, for your contribution to our discussion today, and also to Suzanne Michael, our radio technician. I would like to invite also our listeners to join us next time as we continue exploring the messages from the biblical book of Numbers. Thank you all for tuning in. For Good Word, I'm Zdravko Stefanovic.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.